Adyastu Mahatak Sargo.
Adyastu Mahatak Sargo.
Guna Vaishamyam Atmanaha.
Guna Vaishamyam Atmanaha.
Dvitiyastvahamo
Yatra.
Dravya Gyana Kriyodayaha. Adyaha. The first.
But.
Mahata.
Mahata.
Of the total emanation from the Lord.
Of the total emanation from the Lord.
Sargaha.
Creation.
Guna Vaishamyam.
Guna Vaishamyam.
Interaction of the material modes.
Atmanaha.
Of the Supreme.
Dvitiyaha.
The second.
But.
Ahamaha.
Ama.
False ego.
Yatra.
Wherein. Dravya.
Material ingredients.
Jnana,
material knowledge.
Kriya udayaha.
Awakening of activities.
Work. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Nice. If my translating disturbs, please let me know.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. My class disturbs me. Of the nine creations, the first one is the creation of the Mahatattva, or the sum total of the material ingredients, wherein the modes interact due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. In the second, the false ego is generated, in which the material ingredients, material knowledge, and material activities arise. Purport. The first emanation from the Supreme Lord for material creation is called the Mahatattva. The interaction of the material modes is the cause of false identification, or the sense that a living being is made of material elements. This false ego is the cause of identifying the body and the mind with the soul proper. Material resources and the capacity and knowledge to work are all generated in the second term of creation after the Mahatattva. Jnana indicates the senses which are sources of knowledge and their controlling deities. Work entails the working organs and their controlling deities. All these are generated in the second creation. Listing of 10 phases of creation. It's more or less arbitrary to divide it up into 10. It's a continuous process. There's no labels, announcement, now we begin the second phase. For the sake of analysis, it's being conveniently divided up into 10 phases. And the first few phases belong to the Prakriti phase of creation, the original phase. Meaning simply, what's done by Vishnu himself without the help of Brahma. The second phase is conducted by Brahma as the representative of the Lord. Krishna doesn't get involved with the really tedious, dirty work of assembling the parts. He just provides the basic structure, the basic ingredients, and their basic interaction. Without the involvement of Lord Vishnu, nothing proceeds. But once things get started, he can pass on the work to his assistant. These are the first two phases. Probably use the word phase. The first creation and the second creation. So the first phase of creation is the evolution of the Mahatattva. Mahatattva is the activated phase of material nature. Material nature is We can say dormant. Dormant means asleep. It's a fancy French word for asleep. A present participle, dormant. It's actually a present participle formed the same way as Sanskrit, because it's derived from Sanskrit. Sleeping. That's pradhan. There's no visible manifestation of anything in the pradhana, because everything is just in a perfect balance of equilibrium, and therefore nothing is manifest. The pradhana has to be disturbed, stirred up. It's like you buy a cake mix. Everything's there. Even they may give you even the butter in a little package. But it's not mixed up. You have to get a blender and beat it and stir it up. Add water and make a proper consistency by agitation to make a cake. You can't just open the box and expect a cake inside. Like that, the pradhan is just the raw ingredients, completely in equilibrium, completely unmixed, that needs to be agitated. The first agitation is the glance of Mahavishnu. But even then, what that accomplishes is the first phase and the second phase, and then the third phase, the evolution of the separate elements. So first, because Mahavishnu disturbs Prakriti, pradhana, with the energy of his glance, there are various components of that energy. The time factor is there. The Lord represents himself by the time factor. The controlling impulse of the Lord, his higher intelligence, which directs everything, that's manifested in time. It's his impersonal representation of his intelligence. Just like a programmer puts his intelligence into the computer program, and then the machine carries out the instructions. But that's actually embodiment of a person's intelligence, director's intelligence. Like that, the intelligence of the Lord is embodied in the time factor. But there are several other components. Dravyam kala cha karma cha svabhavo jiva eva cha. These are components of the glances of Mahavishnu. The jivas are there in the glance of Mahavishnu. They've been when Brahma's life was finished in the previous creation, and the creation was totally dissolved, the remaining jivas, many of them, are left. They enter into the body of Mahavishnu. Not like that. Right. And then they come out again when he glances at Prakriti for the next phase, for the next cycle of creation. So the jivas are there. And along with the jivas, they come with their, just like on the parikram, the devotees bring their baggage. A bucket, sleeping bag, a mat to sleep on, or a pail. Simple baggage. So the baggage that the jivas bring with them into the creation is their karma and their svabhava. Two different things. Karma is your svabhava, is your package of desires. That belongs to the soul, although it's twisted around, perverted by our material conditioning.
You're talking about karma now, svabhava.
Svabhava, the nature, which means the totality of your desires, your intentions in life, which is originally coming from the heart, is the urge of the soul, but it's perverted by material influence. And then your karma is your reactions of your past work and the impulses that are projecting you into your future work. So they are two different things. Karma is just material, but svabhava has its roots in our spiritual nature. These two elements are also, in each living entity, has got his own. Just like on the parikram, each devotee has his own pail, bucket, with his name written on it in marker, so that you can distinguish it from all the other buckets. So every jiva has got, coming into creation, you can imagine, millions of jivas, and they all got their svabhava and karma. And it's all sorted out, somehow, by the administrators of material energy. And every jiva gets his, when he arrives at the destination, gets his bucket and pail, his karma and his swabhava. And then the dravyam, the dravyam is contained in Prakriti, sitting there in Pradhan. The dravyam, the substance of creation. Although ultimately Pradhan also is an emanation of the Supreme Lord, but that goes back, way back before this moment of recreation. The emanation of Prakriti, the emanation of the jivas, the original emanation of the jivas, is eternal. The jivas eternally emanate from the Lord. This is not the moment of the jivas' creation, nor of Prakriti's creation. This is just periodic recreation. So the this whole package is injected into Prakriti by the glance of Mahavishnu, and that agitates her. Then, with the presence of the jivas are always a disturbance for Prakriti, and then their karma, further disturbance. Prakriti is disturbed and agitated into action. And the first thing she does is evolve into the Mahatattva. It's not that Prakriti that Pradhan disappears. Pradhan is underlying the Mahatattva. The cause, generally a cause is not transformed completely into its product, but a cause creates its product and still remains as the cause. Just like you have a stock of gold, goldsmith is making so many gold items, he keeps a stock of gold. To do business, he has to have a supply of gold. Every day someone's coming to buy, just commission him to make some gold item, he has to have gold there. So he has a stock of gold, and he uses parts of that stock to make specific items. But the stock remains. So like that, Prakriti Pradhan evolves into Mahatattva, but the original Prakriti Pradhan, maybe you can say, is diminished by the part that's been used up to make Mahatattva, but still, the basic stock remains. So, just like the material creation is now finished, everything's been produced, but Mahatattva is still here. We don't see it because it's subtle, but it's underlying everything, and underlying the Mahatattva is the Pradhan. But that's even less seeable than the Mahatattva. Anyway, Mahatattva is produced, the first creation. And the difference between Mahatattva and Pradhan is that Mahatattva begins to show variety. Things start to separate out. Although, who can perceive them? Who can see Mahatattva? Only a great yogi can perceive Mahatattva. To us, it's just a word. We can hear about it theoretically, but we can't perceive it, not in an electron microscope or a radio telescope or any device. We can't see or perceive the Mahatattva. We can't smell it, we can't touch it. But there is something there, and some yogis can see it. By their yogi pratyaksha, by their special mystic vision. What is there is the separation of the modes. And when the modes are separated, they're competing for predominance. First, the mode of goodness is predominant. Mode of goodness is, originally they're all three in equilibrium, but the equilibrium is disturbed, so mode of goodness gets the priority, gets the more potency. And therefore, at first, the Mahatattva is predominated by goodness, then, as goodness wears out, passion gets its turn, and then ignorance. That's the first phase of creation. There's what's called the, Mahatattva is also called Sutra Tattva. When Mahatattva is predominated by passion, it's called Sutra Tattva. It's displaying its active potency. It's wanting to do something. And what does it do? It moves into the second phase and manifests false ego. And that false ego gets imprinted by each of the three modes in turn. False ego predominated by goodness, predominated by passion, and then by ignorance. That's the second phase of creation. And we'll read later on. We've already read in the second canto what happens from false ego in each of these modes. From false ego in the mode of goodness comes to the mind, right? Or is it intelligence?
I think it's intelligence. Because it's mind passion.
No, I think it's the other way around.
Yeah, I think so.
Mind and intelligence. Mind and the senses come from false ego in the mode of goodness. False ego in the mode of passion comes intelligence. False ego in the mode of ignorance come the physical elements. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds wrong. It sounds like the intelligence should be higher than the mind, but the intelligence is manifested from passion and the mind is manifested from goodness. Yeah. You can check it. That's described in more detail elsewhere. Here we're just getting basic outline of the 10 phases of creation for orientation's sake, like a table of contents. Okay, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments?
One thing, if we don't know it, we have to do it with our minds. It's okay, it's just a detail, but when I was reading the Mahatattva, between a verse and purport and another verse, it seemed like it was like going, the explanation was changing between Mahatattva, it says it's primarily in the mode of goodness, and then another one says it's in the mode of passion, right in within the same two or three pages, and I found that very confusing. But you were explaining
it's changing,
that it depends on what moment the old one is observing.
Yeah, it starts off in goodness, and when Mahatattva is left alone, it tends to be in the mode of goodness. But when it's you know, being pushed to evolve into something more growth, then the lower modes get their chance to be predominant.
Another question is that when you mentioned that it has nothing to do with the re-creation, I think you were implying even at the beginning of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, when you were equating Pradhan with a living entity. But isn't that more like eternally, like we are eternally emanating from Krishna? It's not that there was any moment when we were created. So isn't sort of Pradhan like that, that it's something that,
yes,
I
think
eternally emanating?
That's, I actually, I did say that. That both the Jiva and Pradhan are eternally emanating from the Lord. And this, like we don't, Pradhan doesn't come out of the Lord. We don't see that description. Pradhan is there in the causal ocean. We don't read about, you know, her coming out of Krishna, out of Mahavishnu. She doesn't. She's there. She's been there for quite a while. And the Jivas come out of the glands, but that's not their creation. They were sleeping in the glands. They're just being pushed out, you know, woken up from their sleep.
I read once somewhere, well, isn't actually the Jivas as souls, but there's something about the seeds of the, that in the glands of Mahavishnu, there are actually seeds that then...
Which seeds?
The seeds of us. Maybe I read it in Brahma Sanghita.
Okay.
I'm trying to find it.
See, the seeds, there's the seeds of the universal eggs, but they don't come out of the glands, they come out of the perspiration.
Yeah, something
that's
about,
different.
But instead of it being with jivas in the usual spiritual entirety, that there's something akin to a seed, but maybe it was an esoteric point in Brahma Sanghita.
Only thing I can understand from that, from something that's described elsewhere, the jiva, first of all, the jiva doesn't change.
Right.
You don't change the actual size. You know, jiva doesn't become diminished or increased or even changed, actually. He may seem to be changed. So what happens is an apparent compacting of the jiva. What happens is his potency is restricted by contact with matter, by being put away in the body of Mahavishnu and then being, you know, repackaged into the Pradhan, into the Mahatattva. The Jiva undergoes an apparent alteration. The Jiva in his original state in the spiritual world is described as being more brilliant than 10,000 suns. That's the potency the Jiva has. Individual Jiva. More potent than 10,000 suns. So something happens to that potency. It's deactivated. So the Jiva seems to be diminished, because you're turning down the power.
The power is being diverted.
Suspended,
yeah. It's no actual change, but it's an apparent change because of a diversion of potency, or a suspension of potency. So the jiva seems to become much weaker than he originally is. And in effect, it seems that he's become much smaller. We talk about the jiva being 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, infinitesimally small and impotent. It's a relative, we're looking at it relatively.
To suggest its minuteness, jiva has no material dimension, really, it's spiritual.
Yeah. That's true too. But the appearance of it all is that it's like a sponge. You take a sponge and squeeze all the water out and dry it out in the sun. You can make the big sponge just a little tiny thing. You get these little toys, these animals, the little dried out sponges, and they just look like a little nothing. And you add water and they puff up into a toy animal. Like that. The jiva is been dried out, a little dry sponge, and looks like nothing. The spiritual body is there. That spiritual body has been compacted into a little dry sponge that you can't see any form.
This is the last peaceful in when you mentioned that, like in the Mahatattva and the Mother passion, like she wants to do something, so now you're speaking figuratively between Pradhan and Mahatattva. Are we actually dealing with personality here, or is this
presiding deity? We're talking about both energy, but there's always a presiding deity over that energy.
Right.
Prakriti means two things. It means the physical substance, but it also means the person, Devi Maya, who is the presiding deity. And each of those phases of creation, each of those elements has a presiding deity too.
It's really tricky to get a handle on exactly what is the relationship between the Prakriti and the presiding deity, or the moon planet and Soma. It's hard to understand.
That's the potential confusion.
It's like you draw a circle and you, like a child draws a face in a circle, and that's...
It's designed, the material world is designed for confusion. There's a fundamental duality that everything seems to be dead matter, but there's actually intelligence behind everything. But the intelligence is hiding. Even in our ordinary daily lives, we deal with one another's bodies, and if we're psychologically attuned, we can deal with one another's minds, but we don't see the soul. So we're just dealing with the material person, the external personalities of one another. Well, to speak of dealing with the demigods or the forces of nature, we just see them as matter to be manipulated.
Especially after the Lord Buddha, and make their appearance. After the Lord Buddha, they make it harder for us because they don't come.
Yeah, the preaching of impersonalism promotes materialism. Materialism and impersonalism go together.
Lord Buddha, they don't come anymore. The demigods stop coming, and Krishna.
Yes.
That's also historical.
They don't come because we don't recognize them.
We
see the world more and more impersonally and mechanically. That's our faulty vision. But the material world is designed to promote that faulty vision and make a smokescreen, a whole confusion about what actually is going on.
When I was Gaurav Mohan's age, we used to have every Wednesday we had to wear a tie and we had assembly in the public school in Brooklyn. And they showed us, they took down a big screen and they showed us a movie. And the movie was called Reasons for the Seasons. That was the name of the movie.
Yes.
And obviously, totally impersonal idea, 23% angle of the earth. And that was it. It was just the reasons for the seasons that they ingrained in us, even when I was 7 years old, that there was just no intelligence behind it. And just happened due to physical, circumstantial chance.
Well, what they've accomplished in modern educational system, especially in America, is that there is no intelligence in the students or the teachers. They've, trying to teach a universe with no intelligence, they produce people with no intelligence.
Sarabuddha is the question which I don't think even he could answer. It just another thing which as you say, Maya is designed, the whole material world is designed to be tricky and to confuse us in different ways. So one way it confuses us is we have personalities that are in charge of different things. But it was like rhetorically asking, you know, not that he had a pat answer for it, but wouldn't like Indra get bored, you know, just always like doing the same thing? Or for instance, the sun, so intelligent, these demigods are so much more intelligent and sophisticated than we are. But some of their tasks are so repetitive.
Yeah, boring.
You know, so boring. So like they just do the same thing the same time every day or the same time every year, or they just go around in circles. Or,
in general, people, you know, people put up with that for a few drops of sense gratification.
We're talking about the exalted demigods.
No, same thing, same principle.
Oh, really?
Same principle. Same principle as the man who, you know, works, you know, a boring job all week so he can enjoy Friday night. So like that, demigods, they're enjoying more sense, a lot more sense gratification, and they're doing a lot more boring work.
On a big scale.
Big scale. They got to, yeah, they keep track of countless jivas.
It's like an engineer, that, like an assistant that just throws a switch and lights up New York City, but it's still just a boring thing every day you hit this big switch.
But demigod has to be conscious of all the light bulbs. You know, not just pull a switch, but he's the one who's got to know what's going on.
It's not always all repetitive. Sometimes it's surprising what they do.
Yeah, okay. But we put up with boredom and pain and embarrassment just to enjoy a little sense of gratification. That's life in the cities. Drive 2 hours to work, in air pollution and noise and filth. Just so you can get money in your pocket.
The demigods, in other words, they're also affected by the same kind of psychology, even though they're so great.
Subtly. You couldn't get a demigod, you know, to commute from New Jersey to Manhattan, but there are other carrots that are dangling in front of them, making them do their work.
They're your juicier carrots.
Yeah.
It seems, it was interesting that the point that was made, and I was thinking, like, I remember, if I understand correctly, Prabhupada would equate the ability to be able to sort of forego sense gratification temporarily to achieve something, like ability to put it off later.
Yes.
Is a function of intelligence. Like,
yes.
The ability to sort of, you know, like the example of medicine is given, you know, tastes bad, and the mind says no, but the ability to sort of override that because, you know, in the future or somehow I'll benefit somehow more from that is a mark of intelligence.
Of what we call, what psychologists call maturity. You know, they measure, you know, if a person, you know, a person may be physically a certain age, but, you know, he may be physically 20 years old, but emotionally 8 years old because he can't postpone his
right,
gratification.
Right. So it seems like Prabhupada would equate that ability to being a mark of intelligence, like the function
yes.
of intelligence is able to do that. So if the demigods are more intelligent, it sort of indicates that they would be able to do that even more so, in some sense. Like, you know what you're saying, it must be so repetitive that, like, none of us would be able to put up with it, or some maybe... And I'm speculating,
yes.
But perhaps it's an awesome indication of the supreme intelligence
that they can tolerate so much boredom.
To, in order to, even stretching here.
Yeah, I mean, the material world's a boring thing. It's like, you know, I had to go to this government office. I couldn't, you know, except for one moment, I couldn't get really mad at these bureaucrats. I was just thinking about how boring their life is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got wives and husbands, and children, and they have to sit in this office and then fill out these forms. I had to go to fill out my form once a year, but they got to do it 100 times a day, deal with the same stupid forms. So it takes a lot of tolerance. And you can imagine a demigod, how much bureaucracy he's putting up with. Yeah. For someone who's seen everything, material world is not very interesting, and he's got to be managing all the same, you know, petty bureaucracy constantly. Takes a lot of tolerance. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.